click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
So Brand Finance Africa has just published a report saying that Nestle is the world's most valuable food brand. Let's speak to Jeremy Sampson, the chairman of Brand Finance Africa. Jeremy, thanks so much for your time on Kaya Biz this evening. Before we get into those results, take us through who Brand Finance Africa is and the work that you do.
Good evening, Zinga. Good evening to your listeners. And congratulations to you. We haven't spoken for a little while. Now you've been studying and passing exams with flying colors. So many congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's talk about your work. Finance. Yes.
To answer your question. Basically, London-based, 30 countries around the world, and we specializing in management consultancy, looking at brands and branding. And one of the main things we do, which I think we're mainly known for, is putting financial values on brands. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just a thumbsuck. It's according to an international standard. And from brand valuation, we also is conforming with an international standard. And more now, we really are working across the whole brand spectrum as management consultants, you know, helping people audit their brands, audit perhaps their spend, doing a lot of work in sponsorship as well. Are you getting bang for your buck? So working right across the board. And of course, we have subject matter experts in London. So we like to say we're bringing global best practice to South Africa and Africa. And as you know, Zingi, we've been doing it for quite some time.
Yes. Let's come to that report then. What data do you use to put it together and decide which is the most valuable food brand in the world?
The big thing is you have to have the financial data available in the public domain. In other words, we're not dealing with the companies themselves. They might be clients, but we have Chinese. We're not looking at that. So that usually means that these companies are listed on stock exchanges, therefore they produce annual reports, and that gives us the financials. When it comes to the other side, the intellectual property side, disclosure, we're doing a lot of bespoke research around the world now. And as you can see in our press release, we mention some of the things we look at, like familiarity and preference and things like that. So we have a standard scorecard, and we apply this right across the world. So nothing is different for South Africa or whatever. I know in the past, when I first started doing this sort of work in the late 90s, we did some work for SA Breweries for the first time when they were thinking of breaking out of South Africa, because we still had, you know, the apartheid era, which meant companies couldn't really go and invest overseas. And they got very upset that they had a very low value. And I remember Graham Mackay, who was then the CEO, saying, guys, this is the world we're entering. This is global best practice. We better get used to it.
What makes a brand valuable? I know you've spoken about outside of the money, there's name recognition, but what makes a brand truly valuable?
The big thing is it must have size, and it must be available locally. In other words, scale and availability. And that's where in practically all our rankings, and we do over 100 rankings a year from countries to sectors like this, very, very rarely, sadly, does a South African or an African brand ever appear from the financial side. They do appear from the brand strength side, however, and that's where it can be very, very encouraging, especially in banking and insurance. But sadly, in food and drink, well, we're absolutely nowhere.
Okay, that's interesting. How did Nestle get to the top, and what's the dollar, pound, or rand value of that?
That value is about 46 billion US dollars. And it's the 11th year in a row that they've been the top brand. Obviously, they're Swiss. They have a lot of elements to that brand. And as I say, they're totally global and totally available. You know, just in South Africa, you go into any shop from a Spaza to a Checkers or whatever, Nestle is all over the place. And these are some of the key things. With any brand as well, to maintain the value, you have to maintain relevance. One of the big things about global brands, of course, is that now they market themselves globally. Sometimes you want one name and one logo, and you can apply it around the world. That doesn't happen too often. Sometimes we have derivatives of names slightly adjusted, perhaps into Spanish or into another language. And sometimes the graphics, the packaging is adjusted slightly for local needs. But you have to stay true to that DNA of a brand. Mm. I think you will know in your travels that sometimes a brand you know you've tried somewhere else. Like I believe if you go to Japan, Coca-Cola has got a slightly different, sweeter flavor to here. They might be available in different sizes as well of can and packaging. This is where you take a big global brand, you adjust it subtly, you look at the nuances of the local markets, but you've got to keep that DNA of the brand constant.
You get a bit shocked when you go overseas and you see what you think is a proudly South African product with a different language on there. But I think it's also, there's a sense of comfort when you find a brand that you like. It looks a bit different, like you're saying, the language is a bit different, but you know what you're getting. I think there's a comfort in that as well. What other brands are there in that top 10 of the world's most valuable food brands?
Let me rattle through them, because number two is Pepsi. And you know, people don't always understand that Pepsi is part of a group, PepsiCo. And of course, PepsiCo is available and is very much in South Africa, based down in Belleville, and the old Pioneer Food. So PepsiCo and Pepsi. Pepsi is actually, interestingly, less than half the value of a Coke. Then you go into one of the Chinese brands, which I'm sure none of your listeners have heard of, Nongfu Spring. Then we get back into ground that we're more familiar with, like Red Bull. That's worth 9.7. And then the only brand that we can actually in any way claim some responsibility for, which is Monster, which might come as a surprise, but there are two South Africans who went over to California. They left the country in the late 90s. They bought into a company. And then in 2002, they launched Monster. I believe today Coca-Cola owns about 20% of it. But obviously, one of the key things about Coca-Cola is the distribution. Coming back to my point again, Monster is available all around the place. And think of the value, $8.7 billion. Then you knock down to Gatro, Dr. Pepper, and then there's another Chinese brand at number 10. So most of these brands you will know, but especially the Coke and the Pepsi, and they are absolutely dominant.
I'm interested to see what the impact of boycotts, if any, is on brands. Or are brands so strong that when people are calling for boycotts or divestment or sanctions against brands for whatever reasons, the strength of that brand can set aside those kind of challenges to them?
I think the first thing one has to do is unpack what kind of boycott, because it can be political. At the moment, any brand that might be anti-Semitic or pro-Palestine can be at risk. And around the world, there are different areas of conflict when it comes to the brand. But the longer the conflict goes on, sadly, in Gaza.
Or viewed as, yes. I know that, there's people who are calling for anything that may be associated with what people feel is not anti-Semitic, but from Israel, products from Israel. I know in South Africa, people are calling for a lot of boycotts there.
Exactly. So that's
on
the political
side. How does that work?
And that's where a lot of brands, you know, try and tread, let's say, a non-controversial line by not taking sides or trying not to. And that upsets some people because they say you must commit in some ways. So the political side, especially at the moment, seems to be incredibly sensitive, but perhaps even more so because of the way we have the media, the digital media, you know, whatever kind or channel you're on. Everyone has a voice, whether it's X, Facebook, or so you can rattle out all the different things. That's that side. But then, you know, last year, I think it was, Budweiser, they got into trouble because they were accused of having a media campaign. And that was another aspect. So all big brands today have to be incredibly careful. I'm sure you'll remember in South Africa, Tres Somme, which was part of Unilever, through Clicks, had a campaign going out, and they were accused of racism.
Yep.
And you know, and that's where some people jumped in very quickly and said, oh, terrible, terrible, how dare they do this? I know EFF politicized it and started ransacking, you know, and that became a big issue.
Yeah.
I myself was interviewed, in fact, on one of the TV stations, and I refused to take a stand. I said, it's too early. We have to wait and see how it comes out. Mm. And in fact, a year or so later, one of the boards that it was referred to said it was non-racial. But that was a year later. So, you know, at the actual time, a lot of heat was generated. So to answer your point, it's very complex, very complicated indeed. And this is where all major brands have to be very conscious culturally around the world, racially, politically. All these areas have to be factored in and guarded against, because as you rightly say, they can do huge damage to a brand.
Yeah. When it comes to that list that you've put together, what's the difference between most valuable and strongest, if any?
Strongest is Lindt, the Swiss chocolater.
Big fan. And I understand. I'm adding to their strength, yeah.
I have to admit I'm guilty
heavily
as well.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting that on the research we did, for instance, we find that in the UK, 63% of people think it's expensive. And in Switzerland itself, 56 think it's expensive, yet they still buy the stuff. Because, and this is brand strength, that if you love a brand and if you really like it, you're really partial to it, you can't do without it, or perhaps it's a treat, you will keep going back for that brand.
Yes.
And then the other thing, of course, about a brand that is got into your psyche, it's an emotional decision almost. After all, if you walk down the aisle of any supermarket and you go past the chocolate and you see Lindt, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are tempted to reach up, but then look at the way the price has gone up the last, I don't know, 18 months, 2 years. But then, of course, a strong brand can charge a premium, which is what they do.
And you feel it's your hard-earned money, and it's a delicious treat. So you might not be able to do it as much as something that was maybe 1 rand, but you feel it's worth it, and you feel your money is going somewhere that's, you know, lovely for you. You need a bit of softness and sweetness in life.
Absolutely.
Jeremy, always so good to speak to you and get some insight into brands and what matters and what's important right now. Jeremy Sampson, the chairperson of Brand Finance Africa, joining us here on Kaya Biz, talking about the most valuable and strongest food brands of 2025. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Zinga.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.